Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Vertical Momentum. I am your host, also known as the Comeback Coach. And guys, you know that people that we have on here are thought leaders, game changers, and professionals at self-development and self-improvement. The gentleman I'm going to have on today is changing the game. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Mark Dudek of CSD Hardscaping. Has an amazing product that it's actually a fire pit. And once you plug it in your music, the flames actually go to your music. So whatever you're listening to, that's how the flames go. So definitely check them out. I'll drop the link there. So guys, this is going to be fun. This is going to be great. I love talking to my military brothers, and I'm so grateful that they took the time today. Daniel, my brother, what is going on today?
How's it going, man? Thank you for having me.
Oh, man, I love what you guys are doing. You guys are crushing it. I see our boy is out there looking for trucks and stuff like that.
Yeah, we just were doing that yesterday. He's continuing the search.
So you guys are getting ready to crush. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about where you're from and what kind of little boy were you growing up?
Yeah, sure. I'm from New Jersey. So I grew up in South Jersey, about 20 minutes from Philadelphia.
What town?
What town are you in? I'm in Pensauken.
Now, you know, I'm from Jersey, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I'm up here by Giants Stadium.
Oh, I'm a Cowboys fan. Don't judge me. The only game I've ever gone to was at that stadium. It was amazing.
So now I know you guys are in Jersey. We'll definitely have to get together and hang.
Yes, sir. Of course. So I mean, I had a brother, older brother, younger sister, had a father, mother, obviously. Then decent childhood. Nothing. I was supplied for, you know.
Were you a good student?
No, I was not. I was very, I had potential, but I was very lazy. I only, what I applied myself in, I did amazing in, but the trick was to getting me to apply myself. So I was never good in high school. I didn't do well. I just wasn't ready, I guess, at that time.
Were you an athlete?
No. I was a firefighter from 15 to 21. So I did that for like those years. I did like wrestling when I was, maybe like 7 to 10, maybe. But I have like thin blood vessels in my nose, apparently. So if you like touch my nose, it bleeds profusely. It just wasn't my thing. Little League wasn't my thing. I like playing sports now, but I was a lazy kid, I guess is what it was.
So were you in high school, were you just passing by? And so you weren't really crushing it in academics?
No, I was not crushing it at all in academics. I'm assuming that. All right. So that was, my father turned out to be an alcoholic. So that's right around high school time was when all of it was coming to light. So I don't know if it was family issues or whatever, but I just wasn't there.
What were your coping mechanisms?
Video games. And honestly, when I was younger, it was partying, but thankfully I saw the error in that way. After the military, or during the military, even, it was never really a priority of mine.
So what games were you? Were you a sports game? Or were you,
no, I was shooters forever. I was Halo, Call of Duty, all of them. I did them all the time. I would go paintballing too.
I loved when the first Halo game came out.
That's what got me into video games.
Because we were deployed in like 2003, mm-hmm. And we actually had two separate rooms with four computers, with four TV screens set up, and two teams just playing. Playing that game for like hours.
Yep, Shoddy Snipers was the best. Nothing beats Shoddy Snipers.
Yep, so we had a great time. So now, you know, I love everybody's recruiting story. Talk to me about the day you walked into a recruiter.
Yeah, so I mean, so mine, again, I think it was to escape the life I was currently living. I had no motivation, no drive. I didn't have a purpose, and I could recognize that too. I think that was what was surprising me. So I decided to go. I actually tried enlisting in the Marines first. So I went to the Sicklerville. It's in New Jersey. Right next door is the Army recruiting station also. So I went to the Marines first. I have a chest tattoo from shoulder to shoulder. So they said that was going to be an issue. I had to get a waiver. I got arrested when I was 14. and that was presenting issues also. So after a year, it was literally a year of just back and forth with this recruiter. I was fed up with it, so I just went to the Army recruiting station right next door. I talked to he was an infantryman, the recruiter, and he said, I can have you signed in 2 weeks. I said, all right, have me signed in 2 weeks then. And I signed, and I went. And I think I left a month and a half to 2 months before after I signed my contract.
So now how did you do on your ASVAB?
I don't remember the exact score, but it was 65, 67, somewhere around there.
So you chose to do what job in the military?
I chose infantry. So when I took the ASVAB, I was 23. I went into the Army at 23. And I hadn't done any schooling or anything. I was working a full-time job and a part-time job. So I didn't do school yet. So I was out of school for a long time. So I was surprised that I got a 67, if I'm being honest with you.
So where'd you go to base?
Benning.
So you were a little bit older than some of the recruits there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You went. Yeah. So what was it like going there and being from Jersey number one? We're a different kind of people.
Yeah, we are. The whole water, me saying water, that I mean, yeah. Listen, I was in the Army for 5 years from the day I joined to the day I left, that was brought up. That was a continuous joke. But I think the drill sergeants knew what it was. They knew I wasn't as immature, because I still was immature, but I wasn't as immature as the 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds coming in. I had some life experience, and it showed. So there's the PG, the platoon guide. it's basically throughout basic training, they make different people in charge, quote unquote, in charge of, they represent the platoon, teaching them leadership tactics or leadership skills. So I don't know if my drill sergeant thought I didn't have any or wanted to specifically hone in on mine, but I was PG for like a month and a half, and it was a very good learning experience. I think that set me up for success, because I actually reached out to him. I'll tell that later, obviously, but I reached out to him after a combat occurrence when I went to Afghanistan.
Now, did you, you know, because some people take to the military. Was it something that you took?
Yeah, immediately. I didn't have that rebellious side. You know what I mean? So I knew what it was. I knew I was going to get talked down to. I knew I was going to have to do some bullshit. I don't know if I can curse. I'm sorry. I knew.
Yeah, this is your story.
All right, cool. Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to be. Sorry. All right. So I got blown up twice in Afghanistan, and I've some memory issues, so I may lose track.
It's okay. I got a TBI too, good. So we'll be
perfect.
We'll be confused together.
Yes, awesome. None of us will remember.
And nobody's going to hear this anyway, so don't worry. No,
yes,
it.
They will. We'll put this right on our page. I promise that. Basic training, that's what it was.
Where was your first duty station?
Fort Bliss. I was only at Fort Bliss. So I was at Fort Bliss. It's in El Paso, Texas. It's as west Texas as you can get. It's on the border of Juarez, Mexico.
Texas is the first place I ever got arrested for, what do they call it? Public intoxication.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I'm like, popular there.
I'm like, what the hell is that? What does that mean?
You know, especially near the bases. Yeah, the bases get big.
I was at Fort Hood all for my career. So, and you went to two deployments.
Yes. So, when I graduated basic in AIT, I went to Fort Bliss, and then as the specialist was who picked me up, he said, "Hey, you're deploying to Afghanistan in 2 months, so just tell your people that, like tell your loved ones and shit." So I within 2 months I went to Afghanistan. That was we were with a bunch of good dudes, really really good dudes who had just came back from a combat deployment to Afghanistan the year prior, so they were already still in full tilt. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think that I was trained to the extent I should have been trained to. I mean, I was literally just out of basic training. I didn't go to NTC or anything. But those dudes, without a doubt, taught me what I needed to be taught in an insanely fast amount of time.
Now, I was a 19 kilo, and then I went to 19 Delta, then 11 Bravo. So what was your weapon? What were you holding?
So in Afghanistan, I was a driver. I did multiple things, driver, dismount, gunner. So my favorite. So I was So dismount was the M4. That's what I used. And then on the gunner, on top of the MATVs, for some period of time I was a 240 gunner, and then another period of time I was a 50 cal gunner, and I would just cycle back between different trucks and shit.
I was a tank commander, so between shooting a 105 and then shooting 50 cal, going back to a 240 or M4,
yeah, it's no fun.
You know,
it's almost like driving on the highway. You're going 80 and whatnot, and then when you have to get off your exit and go back into a 25-35 area, it kind of feels the same way.
Now, obviously, you said you got hit twice, yeah, and you don't have to go into all that stuff. Because a lot of people that I talk to now have, struggling with, the PTS, depression. And I just interviewed some of my friends that we lost a couple of our battle buddies in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them came home with survivor's mm-hmm. guilt. So, what was your experience like over in Afghanistan?
Yeah, since me and James co-founded Project Refit, I've been very open about my experiences, my PTSD and all of that. So you can ask me any question you can think of.
The whole thing is about this podcast, it's for people that are interested in self-development, self-improvement. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys, especially we're all hula hula, mm-hmm. and we think that, we don't need
help. Untouchable.
And sometimes if we just hear somebody say, I was struggling and I needed help, and they'll be like, oh, okay.
100, yes. Yep. It puts it into perspective. It makes it tangible, especially when it's somebody else, because then it's not, I think we all have those little negative feelings about ourselves, whether we entertain them or not, they're there. Where when somebody else does it, you don't have that negative bias. It's you're listening to somebody else genuinely. And that opens up those doors and sparks the further conversation.
Yeah. So that's my whole goal. Mm-hmm. Now, people that listen to my show know I make $0 off my show, and that's by plan.
By choice. Yes. And I think that's what's going to make it so special.
That's why we're just trying to impact lives, and because we can, civilians can listen to us and be like, okay, but two Army guys or two Marine guys or two Air Force guys can just sit and talk shit mm-hmm. to each other, and we could crack on each other.
Even Coast Guard, I'll make fun of a Coast Guard, but you signed a contract, so in my mind, you're equal.
And the funny thing is, like, if we're all in a bar, we can pick on mm-hmm. each other. Don't let anybody
don't
else
look at. Don't even look at my boy wrong.
Yeah, so that's one great thing about being in the in the military. We have our own lingo, we have our own slang, but we know whenever a brother's in trouble, I got your six.
100%.
So talk about Afghanistan.
Yeah, so I Afghanistan. We were in firefights. I was in about a dozen firefights, I'd say. The first one, January 28th. It was the first time I ever fired my weapon at another person. So in Afghanistan, we weren't really in charge. It was the Italians that were in charge. We were FOB security, but my leadership, my command sergeant major, he died in Afghanistan, or from wounds suffered from Afghanistan. He was, you remember Jessica Lynch?
Yes.
So he was, his name is, my sergeant major's name is Martin Barreras. His nickname was Gunny. So he was in the Marines for 6 years and then in the Army for 22. And he was, I'm pretty sure he was 75th Rangers the entirety of it, of his Army career. He was Command Sergeant Major of that. But he went on that mission to save Jessica Lynch. He spearheaded it, basically. He brought her to the helicopter and handed her off to the dudes. And then he went back and recovered the bodies of the wounded and other people who fell during that mission. And then I was told also that he... the movie Black Hawk Down? Supposedly he taught the actors in that movie how to portray themselves as Rangers. So he was a very, very larger-than-life figure. Our deployment was the first one, because we had, the FRG and all that. They would update, they would update the families. They're doing this, they're doing that. They had a 4th of July barbecue, whatever. That was the first time his family ever got an update on his stuff, because he was Ranger, so everything was secret. Him and the BC, I'm pretty sure they fought for us to get some not necessarily dangerous, but more meaningful missions. So they started letting us do screen lines. So we sat on the edges of villages and looked if the Taliban were coming in there out or whatever. So we were on our way there. And then we got a call from our CO and he said, turn the fuck around right now. We have five identified enemies. They got weapons, everything. Engage on contact. Cool. It's nighttime. We're in the MATVs. We're speeding through the field. So we're hitting those irrigation ditches every four fucking feet. And then you can see them in the night vision. They're turning around. They can't see us because we don't have any lights on. So we get in the firefight. We do all that. How far do you want me to go with this? Is there a limit? Okay.
No, we have an hour.
Well, I mean, description wise.
No, right, whatever okay. You feel comfortable. Like I said, when I messaged you guys, facts tell, stories sell, and I want people to know. Because a lot of people think the military, they think war is what you see right on TV, and
it's not.
it slows down for a lot of people.
All right, yeah, cool. I can definitely expand then.
Yeah, whatever you want to talk about, and then we'll move on to whenever you want to move on.
So with this firefight, this was the first one of our company, and especially with identified people. If it was a gunfire, it would be pop shots or something. So we ran up on these dudes, the Crows. There was five people. The Crows took most of them out, and then the other gunners did. So I was in the lead vehicle. I was the back right seat, so I was a dismount. My gunner's 240 jammed the second he opened fire. Let me rewind really quick. The Taliban, shot a RPG-7 at our MATV. It missed our MATV by 10 meters, and then they didn't arm it either, so it didn't detonate. Thank God. So then, obviously, our dude started engaging. My gunner's 240 jammed. It was inoperable, so I had to give him my M4. So our dudes laid hate and shit, did all they had to do. So now it's the dismounts to get out. We found out that nobody had dismounted and nobody had, assaulted through or dismounted at all in that area of Afghanistan in 5 years. So this is the first time it's been done properly. So we dismounted. I had to take the driver's gun, and the driver was famously known for not being, reliable. So it turns out he never cleaned his weapon either. So we get out of the vehicle, we line up, some dude one of my sergeants, he had a 320 and he was shooting 40 Mike mics. He shot one at a tree line. It landed perfectly. He shot a second one and it literally landed 20 to 30 feet from us. We felt the heat from it and everything. So this is in the middle of a firefight still. This is pitch blackout. I saw a dude, he still had a gun in his hand. He was on his knees and shit. I'm brand new. I'm in the Army for 4 months at this point. So I just turned over to my squad leader and said, can I shoot him? Is this illegal now? Can I do this? And he's, yeah, dude, fucking go. So I did. I got four shots off. They all hit him, but I got four shots off and then the gun jammed and would not fire again.
You guys need to start cleaning your weapon.
No. Hey, I cleaned my weapon. It was that dude who didn't clean his, trust me. And then, with that, I think that was one of the situations that I don't want to say it because my PTSD doesn't necessarily really derive from the bodies. I understood what that was. They were fighting for a cause. We were fighting for a cause. And that's the outcome of it. But one of the dudes got hit with a 50 cal and it peeled his skull back and his brain. It was sitting on the ground and it was in the shape of Africa. The entire continent, it looked exactly like it. And I stepped in it by accident. I vividly remember that. That's one of the very few things I can that memory has not faltered at all throughout the years. So that was the first firefight. And that was pretty much one of the most up close and personal ones too. The rest of them were 200, 300, 400, 500 meters away. We they were still in the village, so we didn't necessarily do BDA on them or anything. Where these dudes, we did the BDA. We scanned their eyes, fingerprints, all that shit. What messed me up the most was the first IED. The second one still, but the first one was the worst. We were in a wadi, and it had just rained, and I was the second vehicle in formation. I turned to the right. I was looking at my lieutenant. We were talking about how we were the only platoon in our company who had not run over an IED yet, right? So I have a habit of looking at people when I speak to them. So when I looked at him to talk, the lead vehicle had made its turn out of the wadi onto the hardball road. So I missed their tire tracks. And there was puddles because it had just rained. And there was multiple tire tracks because we're not the only ones who use wadis as roads. The locals use it too. So I had to guess kind of on which tracks I was going to follow. I guessed wrong. So we were in the Mark 19 vehicle. So for anybody who listens who doesn't know, it's an automatic grenade launcher that's mounted on top of the a truck. It shoots 40 Mike mics. We had six.
And it sounds awesome.
It really, really is. We had 620 40 mics in the truck. And then one of the dismounted 240s left a 100-round belt of 7.62 also. So when I made the wrong choice, the back left tire had run over a pressure plate, which ignited 200, roughly around, they said it could have been more, but roughly around 200 pounds of homemade explosives. So that blew the left tire off. It ruptured the oil line and fuel line, which immediately ignited a fire. So in those vehicles, you have combat locks. I'm sure you know this. I didn't combat lock my door, and the interpreter behind me did not combat lock his door. So when the IED went off, both of those doors flew open. My gunner, he obviously had his harness on, but the power of the blast snapped the harness, and he got launched out and landed on the hood of the vehicle and immediately got knocked unconscious. So when the blast went off, my helmet strap broke too. And my helmet flew off and I hit my head on the roof of the vehicle. So I blacked out for under a minute. I obviously don't know the exact time. We'll say under a minute. When I came to, that whole, in the movies, the whole life flashing before your eyes shit happened. The ringing in the ears, obviously, like that's science. We know that shit happens. But the dust settling, how it's like, almost looks like the dust is stuck in the air, slow motion, happened. It was insane. So when I came to, I was on fire from my waist down. My legs were like pointing out of the vehicle because I had tried to climb over the radio mount to get out of the vehicle. But my kit was too bulky, so I couldn't fit. And I was in shock, so I didn't think like, hey, immediately take it off, you know? So I'm sitting in there struggling. And I remember, this is what my brain lets me remember. I remember that I was just saying, let me back up, I'm sorry. So out of those five vehicles, four of them are tan. One of them is like the old army, like the multi-cam, you know what I mean? Like the green, brown, tan, that the multicolored shit. Yes. And then our my lieutenant was the only African-American lieutenant in our company. So he was noticeable. Well, it turns out the Taliban put a hit out on us, and they put a hit out on our truck. So that's essentially what that IED was for, I guess, but I ran it over. So I came to and I was on fire from the waist down, couldn't climb over the radio mount. I was freaking out. I'm on fire, like a loud man yelled that I'm on fire. Well, the gunner and I actually had the same therapist and psychiatrist when we got back. And picture somebody burning alive, the blood-curdling screams that come from that. That's what I was doing. But my brain will not allow me to remember that. So while that's all happening, the 7.62 was directly behind my seat, had started to cook off in the vehicle. So then at some point I finally, the other dismount, was screaming at me to take my kit off, like, yo, come on, get to it. And then after some time, it finally stuck that I needed to do it. So I took my kit off and I jumped out. So I had no helmet, no body armor, no gun. The gunner had, got woken up by my screams. So he, as soon as I was jumping out, he jumped off the hood of the vehicle and he jumped on top of me and covered me with himself and scanned the top of the wadi to make sure we weren't being ambushed. So, then we ran to the lead vehicle and got medevaced out of there. So that's the,
so now, mm-hmm. Okay. You know, you leave Afghanistan, mm-hmm. eventually, and then you get, yep, home. And how long did you stay in after you got home?
So after Afghanistan, 4 months after Afghanistan, I waived my dwell time and I went to Djibouti, Africa for 7.5 months. And it was during that deployment, my parents had started a divorce. So I was helping my mom with that. And just different life things were happening, that being one of the main causes. And I realized, I'm probably not, I don't feel the same as I felt before. And I asked my mom, like, had she noticed anything? And she said, I noticed the day you came back. So she knew something was off. But it's actually, it's actually a funny story as to how I got diagnosed with PTSD. Okay. So after that second deployment, me and one of my boys, Ford, you know the game Fruit Ninja? Yeah, we were playing it in real life, though. So I had a kiwi, and he had a kitchen knife, and I threw it up, and he would cut it. So I was wearing a gray, like, Hanes shirt, and the kiwi hit me on my nipple, and there was a wet spot. And he was like, oh, you're lactating. I was like, you just hit me in the tit with a kiwi, dude. Come on, let's be serious. So I lifted my shirt up, and I squeezed my nipple, and, like, pus came out, like yellow liquid. And I was like, hold the fuck up. So I checked the other one, and the same exact thing. It turns out that I was under so much stress that my hormones were just fucking outrageous. The PA, the doctor said it's either breast cancer, brain cancer, testicular cancer, or stress. I was like, dude, it's stress. Come on, let's be.
I'll take
I know it's stress. So I had to go get tested for all of them. I can comfortably say I never want to get my testicles ultrasounded again. Not a good time. It's not nothing I'd recommend. Very embarrassing. but all the cancer shit came back clear, obviously. So he said, you have to go to behavioral health one time. That's all he said. One time. You have to go and talk. I said, all right. So I went and talked that day. And I talked to an Army, like one of the Army girls. Like, she works in the behavioral health department. It wasn't a clinician yet. And they do like the screening and shit. And it was a two and a half hour conversation, and like I was getting emotional, she was getting emotional, it was insane. And she was like, yeah, it's, you're talking to somebody today. And I said, all right, sounds good to me. And I haven't stopped therapy since,
you know. And I love that I've been in therapy now officially 11 years shit. And you know,
it's amazing.
So talk to us about, you know, because you know, now I've talked to hundreds of people, you know, Army vets, Navy SEALs, and we all have to say, no matter what branch of service, 99% of us, when we get out, you know, we miss our compadres. You know, we don't have a mission.
The purpose is gone. Yes.
Yep. And then for me, you know, I did over 23 years in the military. I mean, but I got thrown out the first time for being a drug addict and alcoholic, and they let me back in. So I stayed for, you know, 23 years between National Guard and Army time. But, you know, after I got in the second time, I turned my life around, and I became, you know, Soldier of the Year and NCO. But my whole life was wrapped up in being Sergeant Kaufman. And the day that they discharged me, you know, it was the day I attempted suicide, but I didn't know who I was. So a lot of it, you know, like I said, you know, you lose your purpose, you lose your compadres, you know, you don't have a mission. And like my friend, Sergeant First Class Nick says, you know, once you step off base, the military does not give a shit about you anymore. And the phone stops ringing. So what was your transition like?
So mine... So I was getting med boarded out for PTSD, but at that time, so the transition, some of my transition was still at Fort Bliss. I was still at Fort Bliss for 3 weeks after I was out of the military because they wouldn't finalize some of the clothing shit. It was insane. But when I came home, I was dating a girl for, at that time, I think it was 2.5-3 years. Met her while I was in the military. She wasn't, but I met her while I was in. It was a long distance pretty much the entire time. The plan was for me to come back to Jersey, live here for a year, get reacclimated with society, and then move to San Antonio and live with her, go to school there, do my shit there. So I had a plan and structure set up prior to leaving the military.
You know, like Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
That's exactly what it was. I plan the vet center, and I go to the vet center in Philadelphia for therapy. I had an appointment planned with them prior to me even coming home. So I had a schedule set, some structure. Well, that relationship did not pan out, obviously. She was cheating. Dude looked exactly like me. It was fucking weird. It's like she went to the dollar store and got the dollar store version of me.
But you got GI Bro instead of GI Joe, huh?
So So I'm not moving back to San Antonio at this point. My life wasn't falling apart, but I had no direction. So right before I got out of the military, that's when I started Project Refit. That's why I'm on this call. That's the nonprofit that James Corbett and myself founded.
Now what's it called again?
Yes.
Refit. Okay.
So the whole purpose of that, the name says it right there. When you come back from mission, what do? You refit your vehicles, you make them mission capable again. You refit yourself, make yourself mission capable again. When you get out of the military, how do you make sure you're mission capable still? It's a very uncharted territory. So that's where we want to come in. The way Project Refit started was I had started therapy and I wasn't getting what I thought I needed to be getting. The itch wasn't getting scratched at all. So I was looking online for combat veteran support groups on Facebook, Google, whatever, groups that would be near me when I come home. Jack shit. There's nothing. There are none. So I found this one nonprofit, beautiful place. But for me at that time, it couldn't help me. So what it was is it's a peer-to-peer support system, but it's typing. It's only typing. I need to see your face. I need to know that you even care about this conversation. You know what I mean? It's a waste to me otherwise. So I got paired with, and I was very dark at this time. I mean, suicidal ideations. I attempted suicide at this point. Not knowingly, but I was blacked out drunk, but it happened. So I was in a very, very, very volatile place. So I found this nonprofit and I got paired with a guy who was in the Navy in the 80s who never saw combat. Now, right now, I'd love to talk to him again, but at that time, he couldn't reach me. I was in a place where I thought only somebody like me could reach me. I found out later on that's not the case. So James and I have a mutual friend. So when I came back from Afghanistan, James came to one of my coming home party things. Met him there, and I met him there. We were cool. We didn't really talk much. And then a year or two later, which is right when I started therapy, he reached out to me and he asked what the Army does to prevent suicide and PTSD. And if suicidal attempts or ideations occur or somebody's diagnosed with PTSD, how does the Army/military combat that? And I was very, very blatantly on it. They do nothing for you. They kick you out if you have PTSD. They see you as inoperable. That's something that's damaged. So then we were typing a lot, and the same thing I said before, I need to see that you're fucking looking at me. So I said, yo, can we do a video call instead of this typing? And he said, yeah. And it turned out to be a 4-hour conversation of me venting about my PTSD, the issues I had with it, where my thoughts were. It was what I needed. So that's what we built it off of. It's that right there. So now we have every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, we have Zooms. If you want to follow our Facebook page at Project Refit, that's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all Project Refit. We can shoot you the Zoom link if you want to hop on. That'd be amazing. So the Monday and Friday ones are live streamed to Facebook. The Wednesday one is private. Now,
what times are these on Eastern? Yeah, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And then it goes okay. off and it runs until I'd say about like 12:30, 1 o'clock, somewhere around there in the morning. Yeah, we started doing this right when COVID hit because our whole mission statement is to combat isolation. We're not suicide prevention. That's not what we do. We combat isolation. We like dealing with the guys, the men. All right. So guys is asexual. We use that as an asexual term at Project Refit. But we like coming in contact with the people who are just how we were just talking about in that transition period. Maybe they didn't even get into it yet and they're just getting out. So they don't have to deal with that fucked up transition time that we all deal with, that year of loneliness that really, nothing can really fix. So we have a community now of, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands of veterans, current military, first responders, and we have civilians too. So like I had on one of those Zooms, one of my big concerns was going to be the meshing of civilians and veterans, especially veterans talking about their issues. It's a very sensitive and personal topic. So we had a 21 year old girl, somewhere around there, 24, young, younger 20s. And she's a civilian, and she came onto our Zoom, and she talked about she got raped a couple of times, and she was talking about them. And what we have found in Project Refit is pain is pain. It all feels the same. Now, obviously, it has different variations of it, but pain feels like pain, no matter the cause. So she shared what happened to her, and these combat veterans, some of them weren't combat, but there was combat veterans in there who like a hat drop. It was like they were talking to one of their brothers. The whole civilian classification didn't matter there because she was a human being in pain, and they're also in pain. And misery loves company. We love helping other people in pain. I think that's what makes us most qualified.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing, you know, like when I talk, and because, you know, like I said, right. I'm not a professional whatsoever. I only got a 9th grade formal education. But, you know, now after talking to hundreds and hundreds of people, a lot of doctors and psychologists that have had on the show, that, you know, trauma, when an adult acts out, it's usually because of stuff that happened mm-hmm. between the ages of 3
the developmental
and 13.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then you yep. add alcohol to the mix. And then you add war to the perfect mix.
Yep.
The war to the mix. And it becomes the perfect storm. And there is no manual to tell you how to get out of the perfect storm unless somebody's been in the perfect storm and they reached their hand down
yep.
to pull you out. And I think that's what we
no,
do.
We,
you know,
no,
not we. I'm
not
saying
wrong.
Me, you.
We, no, we all do that. That's what we do for our brothers and sisters. I mean, it's called the wounded healer. So, like, my end goal. So, I'm in school right now. I just started college when I got out of the Army. I'm in my 4th semester. I'm going for a psychology.
What college?
I'm at Camden
Which,
County.
What college?
Yeah, I'm just getting my prerequisites out of the way there, and then I'm going to either go Rowan or Rutgers. I don't know yet. But I'm going for psychology. So the end goal is to be a therapist for combat vets. I want to do specifically combat vets because I myself am a combat vet.
So tell me the first steps, because now I want this to, sure. this becomes the teaching part. Tell us the first steps that you took to start getting healthy.
I think the number one thing is admitting that I was not okay. It was admitting I was unhealthy. I think we all find those safety mechanisms, whether they're healthy or not, they alleviate the current pain. And I think that's where we get lost. I would get lost in it. I never turned to alcohol or drugs. It was never my thing. I isolate. That's my drug. I isolate to an unhealthy extent. So that I realized I had to start working on that. But it was really having those no shit conversations. Like, you have to be able to admit you're wrong. You feel right. You feel like what you believe is the absolute truth. But that's because of what happened to you. That's to me that I knew, or I started to know just through the therapy, that the way I was thinking was not the right way. And I was open to criticism and I was open to personality changes. There's certain things, you know what I mean? It was, I did CPT, cognitive processing therapy. And that was mainly focused around my first IED. So it was putting me back in that place and making me deal with the emotions I hadn't dealt with. Now, I dealt with a bunch of them, but not all. There's obviously still, it'll never go away. And I think I think the stigmas is what really does it. And that's another one of our mission statements. It's fuck stigmas, but we put it in Latin. And that it understanding that the stigmas are set by unhealthy people, really. You don't really have to fall to those stigmas then, because that.
Now, you know, one thing I noticed that helped me a lot is journaling. That helped me a lot because, you know, we can think about things in our minds, but once we put something to paper, it becomes real. You know, like when I wrote my book and it came out a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
it was very cathartic because, you know, I put all my mm-hmm. dirty shit I ever did, I put out there. Sometimes it opened up those wounds
that's exactly
in order to heal again. So what are your thoughts on sometimes just, you know, even if nobody reads it, even if it's just your journal, but getting your thoughts out there on paper, putting it away for a little while.
Yeah,
and then
we recommend that to a lot of people on our Zooms or whoever we come into contact with. Yes, I personally do too. I never really enjoyed writing because I'm more of an impulsive person. I would be erasing a lot. So I would do a video instead or an audio recording. Something along those lines where it is a record regardless of how I feel in that moment. And then, like you said, a month, 2, 3, 6, 2 years, whatever it is, come back and look at it. The other day, like, I have a journal right here that I found from when I was in the Army, and it has one, two, three pages written in it. And I read one of them and I was like, wow. Like, I don't really give myself a lot of credit. I don't. But seeing where I was in 2017 compared to now, polar opposites. Polar opposites. Writing, I think what it is weak. When anybody's talking to themselves in their head, you can convince yourself because it's you talking to you. But when you, like you said, write it down, when you record it, when you tell it to somebody else, you're making it tangible. It's now.
Are you there, brother? You went radio silent on me for a second. Can you hear me? Hello, brother. So, like I said, you know, we're talking about journaling and stuff like that. So, we're, you know, I love journaling. It helps me put my thoughts down. Can you hear me, brother? Guys, welcome back to Vertical Momentum. This is part two with my brother from Project Refit, Daniel Matthew. We're talking about how on his Zooms that he has during the week, sometimes they talk about journaling. So talk to us a little bit about your journaling.
Yeah, so I journaled in the very beginning. I kind of fell off with it just because I think too fast, so I'm better at speaking. So instead of, if you don't like journaling, recording the audio, recording a video of it, either way, putting a record of what you thought, transferring your thoughts into something outside of your mind brings a different value to it. It makes it tangible. It makes you be able to process it from different angles, I think.
You know, and I don't know if you know it or not, but we actually have a friend in common.
Who's that?
And she's been on this show. Her name is Megan Trapp.
Mm.
And yes. Her episode should be dropping soon, so she's a great friend of ours. So now, I love Project Refit, and I love it that we are Legion. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so that was a slogan that we came up with. We see a lot of, I think that matters, those types of the morale boosters. And we just see it as we are a community. We are Legion, so we are there for each other. I had one of my dudes call me at 4 o'clock in the morning. I had to get up in 2 hours. I stayed up for that 2 hours. It's just reaffirming that it's a community effort. It's my psychologist said it. Your trauma's happened as a group. The only way it's going to heal is as a group. Another way we're doing that is or combating it at least is we started a mobile base program. So we have a 24-foot long trailer that FNS, it's a yacht building company in Delaware. They decided that they're going to build it for us, build the interior and everything for us. So it's essentially going to be a mobile lounge. We're going to bring this mobile base to sporting events, anywhere where our people will be, to their house. We'll go to Philly, to homeless veterans, anywhere, so we can bring the Zooms to them, so we can bring our resources to them. And there's a whole sponsorship program with that. Like the sponsors, they're going to have their names engraved and also on plaques in the trailer itself, just to continue that the community effort. And then we also have an app. It's called Project Refit Blue Skies. It's on iPhone and Android. But it's a speakeasy system. So there's a password that I'll send to you after. So on this app, we're essentially building a social media app for veterans, military, and first responders, right? So they are the only ones allowed on the app. Civilians aren't allowed on the app. So on this app, there's forums, there are resources, there's uh, uh, we're there's therapists, there's other veteran nonprofits on there. We're going to be putting therapists on, I should say. There's other veteran nonprofits. We have a back onto the Legion aspect of it. In the app, we're sticking to the fire team mentality. So with this app, there's the event and listen feature. If, say, I put you on my fire team, I put you, James, and three other people, and I have to vent. When I hit vent, my fire team are the first people who get notified that I need to talk. And if they don't answer in 30 seconds, it goes to the rest of your friends. And if they don't answer, it goes to the rest of the Project Refit community. So you're going to be answered, basically. And then also on that, there's going to be different job opportunities, any veteran-owned businesses, like I said, that we can put in there, your podcast, we can put in the app.
Oh, I would love that.
Yes. So it's see, that's the thing. For anybody listening to this, anybody you know, any veteran businesses, anything, we're not necessarily asking anything. Like, it's not like, oh, you have to do this for us to get, you're a veteran doing something good, we're going to put you in the app. That's just common sense. We're trying to provide as many healthy resources for people transitioning out, people in therapy, people trying to get into therapy. We're trying to make as many resources as possible. One of the end goals is to be in the the 5-day workshop. What is it when you get out, the transition?
Was it the Warrior Transition Unit or something?
They've changed it so many times. It's the 5-day. They teach you how to do a resume, all that shit. I want Project Refit to be in that, so that people getting out of the military know for a fact that there's a resource that covers X, Y, and Z for them, and they're not spending that year alone getting lost in the sauce and wondering what the fuck could I have done.
And you know, talking about transitioning, I've talked to a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of CEOs of different companies and a lot of hiring managers, and they say most of the time when a soldier gets out of the military and, you know, puts their resume in, they don't know what they're looking at, because we put in so much acronyms and shit.
Mm-hmm.
For them, their eyes glaze over and then they just throw it onto a pile.
Yep.
But I think that would be great, you know, do something to teach them how to write a resume that will actually apply
to them and in a civilian world.
Exactly.
They do that. They listen. Like, I never did a resume before, but in this 5-day workshop, I mean, the guy, he sat down and helped me build it. That's not my issue. It's people getting out. They don't have the resource. They don't have people to talk to. They don't have anyone to vent to, anyone to teach them how to claim, you know what I mean? Claim a percentage. They don't, how to use the GI or the post 9/11 or the VRNE. No, a lot of these people didn't have it explained to them. So instead of them getting overwhelmed and possibly taking darker paths because of the limbo of everything, our goal is to eliminate all of that. Here is what you can do. Here is who does it. Let us introduce you.
Yep. And guys, if anybody's listening to this that's active duty, make sure that you have every single thing annotated. Make sure that you have everything on paper in triplicate, because when you go to the VA, sometimes it becomes a shit show. Fortunately for me, the New Jersey VA has been great for me, and I can only speak for myself. But if you don't have the paperwork, make sure you do have, especially if you have to, if you, you know, went through stuff like IEDs.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not annotated, it never happened.
It never existed. And that's the fucked up part to it all. But so, you're right. I was telling I was a team leader. When I was getting out, I was telling my privates the same shit. I didn't believe in the whole don't go to sick hole. No, if something's fucking wrong with you, you go right now. Go right now and get that documented, dude. I don't give a fuck what we're doing. Because, and this is the way I talked to my dudes. This isn't they knew it, that it wasn't a career for them. They weren't staying in forever. So I agree with you. And at the very bare minimum, leave the military with a full copy of your medical record. Bare minimum, just to eliminate some of the time. Because if you go to the VA and then you're starting the process, it's going to take weeks for them to even find your medical record. Bring that with you, knocks all that time right off.
Yeah, you know, because like you just said, you know, everybody gets out eventually.
Yep.
Nobody's ever stayed. And everybody, whether you do 20, 30 years, we're all going to get out.
There's a life after it, and I think people don't focus on that.
So now talk to us about what kind of struggle you had finding work and a job afterwards?
So I haven't worked after, and I don't think so. So with the IED came, I didn't drive for 5 years after a little over 5 years after that first IED. I didn't drive in Afghanistan again, and I didn't drive in the civilian world. I actually just witnessed a car accident a couple of days ago, and it sparked some shit back up. So that, I mean, that's a perfect example of how I'm still struggling with it. I'm not comfortable driving right now. And it's not that there's a fear. I know there's no bond. There's nothing like that at all. It's my fear is that the impact and the sound of a car accident are going to be extremely similar to that of the IED, because the IED did truly feel like I felt like I got hit by a semi. So it's just those little insecure fears. But I also know that I don't know if I'd be able to hold down a job. Even still, I mean, I'm good, I'm in therapy and everything, but things still affect me to a certain extent. So I don't know if,
so now talk to us, you know, cause there are certain people that are listening to this are in the same situation,
mm-hmm.
and they don't, you know, they might've just gotten out and they're like, well, I don't know how am I supposed to get around if I don't drive? So how do you maintain?
It's not going to sound fucked, but it's support system. It's the only thing that gets you through all of this. Having a secure, good support system, friends, family, whatever it may be. I have a friend who, even though I drive now, I'm not comfortable driving in Philly. He'll take me to the VA, and then we make a lunch thing out of it. You know, it's things like that. There's some sacrifice that comes with it, unfortunately. It's definitely having a positive and good support system. I have my mom, I have my friends, I have some family that are willing to help me when I need it. And that's what I needed back then when I wasn't driving at all. I needed not coddling, not enabling, but understanding. And that's what it was. So I for anybody listening who's going through it, I mean, it's find a good support system that's going to help you. And if you can't, if you can't find a good support system, guess what Project Refit is? It's a great support system. We're all over the country. We have members all over the country. California, Idaho, Florida, Texas, all of them. So we can find you a support system.
I moved to New Jersey 11 years ago with $50 in my pocket, the clothes on my back, and only knowing one person, which is my bride. And I was the kind of guy, like you said, you know, I would rather be in my room than be around people.
Yeah.
Until one day I woke up and said, you know what? I'm fucking lonely.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like looking around. I'm like, I don't like this. But it was at that moment that I realized in order to have a friend, I had to be a friend.
Yes.
So talk to us about how, you know, you deal with, you know, your struggles of, like you said, being introverted sometimes and how you got out of that in a way.
I still deal with it to an extent. And again, it's my friends that understand it, but it's exactly what you said. It's just waking up that one day and, all right, how long is this going to go on for? Like, I understand it. It's a healthy coping mechanism to an extent. But when you start relying solely on that, it's no longer a coping mechanism. It's now affecting you negatively. So I, even though I do not want to fucking, like, after this podcast, I have to go to Home Depot. And it's not like I'm lazy. I don't want to go. I my core in my body screaming, don't go. Now I have to ignore that and I have to go. So that's really what it's exposure therapy. That's really what it is. It's like I said, in the beginning, when you're first dealing with this kind of stuff, it's understandable to think that way and to live your life in certain circumstances like that, but to not get lost in it. And that's, I think, what I haven't done. I haven't gotten lost in it. I've always, kind of kept it at a reasonable level, I think, except for when I'm in a bad place. And I think that's another thing that people don't take into consideration. You're allowed to be in a bad place. You're allowed to be not okay. You're allowed to do that shit. It's as long as you come back from it. Don't stay in that place.
I love that. You know, I love the old saying that if you're going through hell, keep going.
Yep.
You know, so last two questions.
Sure.
How do we find you? How do we find Refit? How can we connect with you guys and support your mission?
Sure. So on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, it's at Project Refit. And then if anyone wants to email me or James, if you any questions, any sponsorship ideas, anything that you think could help us, if you need help, any of it, my email is d@projectrefit.us. And then James is j@projectrefit.us.
Okay, so last question that I ask everybody, and I love it because I ask 100 different people and I get 100 different. You know, we live in a crazy world now. We're living in a COVID world, you know, where parents are trying to put in work three jobs if they can to put food in their mouths, kids' mouths. Got grandparents teaching, homeschooling kids. So if I ask the average person to do something in 7 days, they're never going to get to it. But if I ask somebody to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely to take that step. So what can somebody do if they're like me and you? You know, this is a WE program. You know, like I go to AA and NA, it's a WE program. You know, I get drunk, we stay sober. So if somebody is struggling in life, you know, even just getting out of the military, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to get help?
Reach out to somebody. That's it. It's reaching out. It's opening that door. It's starting that conversation to get you to process that you're not okay, or to even find the help. But it's starting a conversation, communicating, whether you know what's wrong or not. It's communicating that you're not okay. That's the start of it all.
I love that, guys. So if you're listening to this, definitely check out Project Refit. They got some awesome stuff. I was going through your stuff as I was looking at it. I can't wait for the app to come in. And I'm sure you're going to send me those links that I can put in the show notes.
You can download the app now. The app's already out. You can download it now. But right if this is done, I'll email you the password for it.
Yep. So, and guys, like I said, thank you to our sponsor, Mark Dudek. It's truly amazing. Like, he has a fireplace that goes to your music. So, like, if you love Metallica, the flames will actually go to the music.
That's crazy.
And I think it's called a reactive fireplace. And I'll put that in the liner notes. And he's another veteran. And all my sponsors on the show are veterans 100% of the time. So I always support my vets. Brother, thank you so much. Tell our brother, hopefully he gets the right truck.
Yes. And,
you know, let him know that we had an amazing conversation. And, you know, now that we've talked, you know, I consider you a friend and a family member.
Likewise.
And, you know, any way we can get together, hang out, have coffee, or I can support your mission, I'm down with
it. Same thing goes to you. Like I said, we're going to throw you in the app, and even your veteran sponsors, we can throw some of them in the app too. Why not? As long as they're veteran-owned companies.
Yep. I'm all about my veterans, brother. All right. Well, God bless, brother.
All right, brother. You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.